everyone. Welcome back to Not About the Weather. This is our episode 23, coming to you in mid-March 2018. I believe it is one of the Ides of March today. Is that correct?
No. I have two more days.
I'm not sure what that is, but I know we just left forward and no one's happy about it.
March 15th. It is March 13th.
Okay, well, whatever.
For this close wayward enough. American.
no one stab anyone. That's all fine. Anyway, so we're back with Not About the Weather to talk about how we're feeling about life, the universe, and everything. This week, I am your host, Natalie, and we have Brittany and Mitch weighing in on their very important emotions today. So if you would like to reach out and talk to us or contribute a question for us to read on the show, you can contact us at NATW Podcast on Twitter, which is also our handle for Instagram, a Facebook page, and our Gmail, natwpodcast@gmail.com. The website for this podcast is notaboutheweatherpodcast.com, and you can also follow that as a Tumblr and leave us an ask there. So that's where to find us, and you can reach out if you want to in this great year of 2018. We are trying to move forward with this podcast, especially as we are coming to a bit of a turning point on our other group podcast, Rewatchable. So that's something that we may or may not touch on today, but you can also catch us over there talking about Buffy and Angel on hyperball.com. So that is who we are. How is everyone today?
Wonderful.
Good. It's been such a long time. I'm so happy to be back in this hosting seat for Not About the Weather. It's fun.
Yeah. I was going to say, in tradition of not talking about the weather, I can't wait for winter to be over because we've had our third nor'easter in 10 days. So
there's another one coming.
And there's another one coming. So March is really, really hurting us over here.
I'm so happy I moved out of New York. We just don't get that kind of snow in Denver. People think you do, and it should keep people away because the city's growing way too fast. There's just traffic too much. It's not Los Angeles level, but it's getting there. But yeah, I feel you, Britt, because that was miserable growing up. So peace out, nor'easters.
Yeah.
Okay, so small talk, that's over. No, time for the big talk. So as you may or may not know, if you're tuning in, the main body of our show is that we just talk about something that we've liked recently and something that's been pissing us off. So a hype and a gripe, or a grievance to air and an obsession to share. So we are each going to talk about something that we have feelings about at the moment. And there have been a few things this week that have made us have some feelings, some news in the world of entertainment and pop culture and life that's stirred up some feelings. So we will go with hypes first this week, and we're going to, you know, hopefully not end on too much of a sour note, but we're going to start with hypes. And Brittany, do you want to go first, given that your name is first on the list on this document, or does anyone else want to go first?
No, I can go first because I just rewatched the trailer three times. I said I was going to do it once, and I ended up watching it three times to talk about Christopher Robin and my beautiful leading man, Ewan McGregor, and his sad, sad, sad face. So yeah, the Christopher Robin teaser trailer came out last week, I believe, and I watched it at work because I'm like, oh, it's a teaser trailer. It's like a minute long and nothing's going to happen. And then I had to excuse myself and go outside for a minute because it was so much for me to handle. So Christopher Robin is the tale of, as you know, Winnie the Pooh, and Christopher Robin comes back. He's an adult in this movie. And he's played by Ewan McGregor, and he's bogged down by life and work, and, you know, he misses a family vacation and he has to fire people. And who comes to his rescue but Pooh Bear? And he's so cute and not as terrifying as Paddington. So that's a plus. He looks like
oh
he actually
my God.
has some texture. Well, listen, they're two different bears in two different worlds. Let's get that out of the way right now. Pooh looks like a stuffed bear, and I think Paddington is not supposed to look like is not reflecting a stuffed childhood bear, but Pooh is very much reflecting something that looks like he has a lot of texture and wear, and did not lose his voice because it's the same voice actor from 30 years ago playing Pooh. And
didn't know that.
Yeah, it's as soon as you hear it there. As soon as I heard it, it like made me catch, like something caught in the back of my throat. And then I later found out that it's because it's the same voice actor, and it's just very overwhelming to hear him be Pooh again. And it was just wonderful. And he's just this cute little stuffed bear who touches Ewan McGregor's face in a very nice and soft and gentle way. And I think it's going to break my heart. The only issue I have with it is that as soon as it came out, everyone's like, oh, so it's basically the movie Hook. And I was like, okay, hold up. Because
Hook, I didn't even think of that, but you know, yeah, okay.
The similarities are there. I will give it to you, but please, this is a teaser trailer. Do not reduce the whole movie to be a cheap knockoff of Hook from the start, because there's so much more to come. We have Rabbit and Owl and Kanga and Piglet and Eeyore, and they're all coming back, and I'm getting very excited and nervous. Also, this movie comes out literally 2 days after my birthday, so I'm like really jazzed. It's gonna be a lot to handle. Really, really, really just looking forward to it. And I haven't been exactly on board with anything coming back from my formidable childhood days, including like my very, very rough relationship with Will and Grace and future rough relationship with the Roseanne revival. I've just been having a hard time because they've aged, and that's a thing. And I don't think that the writing on those things has gotten better, but this is something so much from my childhood, yet so different. Like, it's such a radically different take on it that I think it's going to be more wonderful, because it's not just another Pooh cartoon. I grew up watching the Pooh cartoons and like the really old, old ones with like the opening where they have the stuffed bear and they go through the like bedroom, like that old school Pooh. I had my younger brother's bedroom was all painted and decorated with like classic Pooh stuff, like lamps and just beautiful like old Winnie the Pooh books that I used to read all the time. And so I really grew up with Winnie the Pooh, but not as like when you get older you're like, what was your favorite thing as a kid? And I was like, well, The Little Mermaid. But Winnie the Pooh was always there, and this is so different. It's not trying to be anything that was exactly like what I grew up watching, whereas like Beauty and the Beast was like, still to this day cannot handle it. It was awful. Like the live action Beauty and the Beast, I personally feel was an abomination and one of the worst things ever created.
Oh, preach.
And I never want to ever see it again. I almost left during Be Our Guest. I've said this before. I almost left during Be Our Guest. I'm still angry about that entire movie exists. And so the worst part about the Christopher Robin trailer set, it says from the creators of Beauty and the Beast. Because I don't think that they're going to mess it up as badly as they did Beauty and the Beast. But this is trying to be something different. It's not trying to recreate something that is beloved. So that's where I'm putting all my hope.
Well,
that's nice.
Who do you think the market is for this Disney live action slate? You know, like, do you think it is for children or for people who are children in the 90s?
I think it's for people who are children in the 90s because they're having children. So it's something that they can take their children to and then immediately rush them home and say, okay, now I'm breaking out a VCR, teach them what a VCR is, teach them what a VHS is, and then show them the original. Because I'm hoping that that is what my generation is doing, because some of this new stuff, while great, sometimes I'll pause when my niece's shows are on and be like, well, maybe I should stay in the loop on what's going on PJ Masks. But, you know, like, there's a level of education here that we can show them the new stuff, but also teach them what the originals are and then maybe learn that the originals weren't that great. Who knows? Like, I mean, granted, all of the movies that I watched when I was little, I've continued to watch. Like, I never stopped watching them. So I don't think there's really been that much of a distance between me being like, oh my God, I used to watch that movie all the time when I was little. Watching it now, it's so different. Because I am a creature of repetitiveness. And so I don't think I've ever really stopped watching anything. But yeah, I think that the target audience is adults who grew up with these movies who now have kids that they can take or will be able to watch this with within the next couple of years.
Yeah, I'd say. And I think it's like roughly like the Jurassic World effects, how that movie just blew up and was, I don't even know, just it made too much money for its own good. And it's probably the same effect of what happened with Beauty and the Beast. And I'm sure what's going to happen here with Christopher Robin. So why not? I mean, I'm happy to see this all kind of going on. I wish they were going more of the route that they started with Maleficent, but then they kind of went away from like telling alternate stories or telling villain stories. And they went to just straight up live actions. And now they're doing, yeah. Okay. I agree that they're doing kind of a hook thing, but I don't think that's a bad thing. I know that movie is like ripped to shreds by critics. Usually whenever I look
to see a review,
I'm sad about it. I don't know. It always has like a 20% rating on Rotten Tomatoes or something garbage.
Why?
And, I get sad for it because I like movies like this that show you like how your childhood grew up with you.
Yes, I would rather. I'm quite excited about Christopher Robin as well. And I mean, I love Ewan McGregor. And yes, he's a sad-faced man. And it's always very good. Brittany, have you seen Salmon Fishing in the Yemen?
No.
Oh my God, watch.
Is that your quote tweet, like the one that you have in your header?
No, that's Velvet Goldmine.
Yeah, I was going to say that's Velvet Goldmine.
So that was he was a sad man in that too, but a young sad man.
He plays two sad men in Fargo. So if you really want double the UN sad men.
Oh, I love him. But yeah, watch Salmon Fishing in the Yemen. Trust me, you will not be mad at me. I like the sequel idea. I like that the same goes for Mary Poppins, which is going to tie into something a bit later. Like I prefer that. If Disney wants to remake movies, I would prefer that, like a poignant sequel to a remake like Beauty and the Beast, where it's just not working out, you know, like it's not the same. And so, like, it's in terms of, like, Aladdin and Mulan, I don't know how they're going to go in terms of remade, you know, just the original film. But, yeah, I definitely prefer the sequel. So Christopher Robin is the most appealing of the Disney live action to me. Love Ewan McGregor. Love Hayley Atwell. Absolutely stoked to see them together. But I was still like, creepy CGI and real life movies, you know, I just had to get over this with Paddington, and the Pooh Bear is freaking me out. And then he spoke, and then I was like, oh, it's fine. I'm okay. I'm not okay. Like, you know, like I was very skeptical until he spoke. And then I was just like, oh, fuck.
Yeah,
like,
so yeah, there's this commercial that came out around, I think it was in January, it was ahead of the Super Bowl in America, because I don't, it's for a tax company. I'll send it to you, Natalie, but it's for a company called TurboTax, and they were doing, like, you know, like sort of like things you would expect to be terrifying but are end up not being terrifying. And it starts off as like this like horror movie, and this girl's like in a closet and she's like crying and getting really nervous, and then like the door whips open and you expect something like really gruesome to be there, but it's this tiny, maybe like 2-inch tall little stuffed bear, and it just dances. And there's no music. There's no music. It's just this bear doing, like, it's the exact same CGI as this Pooh Bear. And it's just like, and just dancing. And it is the funniest and sweetest thing I've ever seen. And this Pooh Bear reminds me of that little bear so much. And I agree, though, I am not a fan of the mixing of tons of CGI with, like, real people. And I think it's because I'm exhausted by Once Upon a Time's horrible integration of CGI. But seeing Pooh, like, I think that Pooh not being able to, like, not moving his mouth or anything.
Yeah.
Like, you know, like, it, that type of, like, animation just, like, guts me. Like, I think it's either hilarious when it's meant to be hilarious or devastating when it's meant to be devastating. And looking at little Pooh come over the bench, I saw so many, like, screenshots of it. Like, just people, like, you know, posting it on Twitter the day it came out. And it's just the little Pooh face over the back of the bench. And I was dying. It's like, it's going to probably be my favorite movie of the year. And that's including a movie with puppets that's coming out where Melissa McCarthy is married to an ex-cop puppet. Could there be anything more well-suited to me than that movie? But I think it might be Pooh Bear. So it's, I don't know. I'm feeling a lot of things over literally 5 seconds of interaction between you and McGregor and a stuffed doll. So I wasn't expecting to feel so many feelings.
And it's interesting that off the back of this, well, not off the back, this comes off the back of there was a probably not very widely released movie produced at the same time by Fox, not by Disney, that's like a dark biopic of A.A. Milne and Christopher Robin with Domhnall Gleeson. Did you see anything about that one?
Was that came out, right, last year?
Yeah, Goodbye Christopher Robin. And because this is CGI, this took longer to finish, the actual Christopher Robin, but they were getting made pretty much at the same time, and it was very confusing.
Yeah, no, I saw it. I've, like, caught the end of it on TV, like, on HBO, and or one of those channels, like HBO or Showtime or something, but I've never seen the whole thing through.
Yeah. And so it's like, it was kind of like the putting together, or almost like the putting together. I don't think they're related at all. I think it's, you know, a coincidence, but it was kind of like last year we had Wonder Woman come out, and then we had the Professor Marston and the Wonder Woman biography of the author come out, which were completely different movies, both very good. But yeah, it was just one of those circumstances. But because this one's called Goodbye Christopher Robin and the other one is just called Christopher Robin, I was very confused for some time.
Yeah.
Wow.
This is like with everything lining up. It was like, oh, we're doing a live action Lion King. No, we're doing a live action Lion King. No, like, it's just too, like, I could not tell you who's cast in which Lion King because I have no idea.
What?
I didn't know there were two.
Yeah, there's like two Lion King movies. Hold on.
Here's my thing. This is a side gripe. Jungle Book, Lion King. These are not live action movies. They are completely CGI. Why are we calling it a live action movie? Like, it's not 2D. It's just advanced 3D animation. It is not a live-action movie. I don't understand why this is a thing they're trying to make it. They're not using real lions.
Yeah, it's not like a that's documentary what I was going to say. Is it like Air Buds, where they just have like the
No, it's just advanced CGI, so it's
then that's
just
not live-action. Yeah, you're right.
I know.
That's really funny. Like,
and, you know, I don't know. But anyway, yeah, there's all these Yeah, Jungle Book, like all of this nonsense, really. anyway, what else about Christopher Robin? Yeah, it's going to be sad.
I'm sad about the two titles being similar because I'm already confused. Just Goodbye Christopher Robin and Christopher Robin. It makes me feel like there should have been some kind of agreement there that wasn't going to happen, but maybe people dug their heels in and that's why it is the way it is.
So that is, that is that. And when does that come out?
August of 2018.
Cool. Yeah, should be good. And then just as a side note, did you see the Mary Poppins? What did you think of that?
I didn't care. And I love Mary Poppins so much. And I was waiting. Like, I watched the commercial when it was happening live. And, you know, Mary Poppins is coming down. Like, you know, Lynn. I was like, okay, Lynn, yay. Like, happy for him. But, you know, you see Mary Poppins coming down. And I expected to feel something. And I felt absolutely nothing. I was just like, huh. Like, okay. That's the thing that's happening. Great. And then the trailer that I least expected to make me feel anything, like, you know, sucker punched me. So I don't know. I don't know how I feel about Mary Poppins. I wasn't really on board with the idea to begin with. So I'm going to see it, but I don't know. I don't know. I'm not into it as of right now.
Fair enough. I'm just looking at Disney's slate of upcoming Dumbo, live action Dumbo.
Yeah,
just
live action Dumbo, because elephants are great actors.
That and just sounds confusing. Another Peter Pan, another one.
Oh no, that's like my, Natalie, that is my ultimate gripe for life. Like, yes, I give Hook a pass, but I do not give any others. There's no reason to do Peter Pan again.
I mean, it is, you know, it is a fairy tale story, you know, predating Disney. And yes, there's been lots of versions of all sorts, but this, it seems like there's been so many Peter Pans. Like
there have.
Within my lifetime, there have been so many Peter Pans. But the other one I saw the trailer for, which kind of terrified me, was the Nutcracker. Have you seen the Nutcracker trailer?
Oh, is that with, forgive me for the reference, she plays Renesmee in Twilight. She's kind of like an up-and-coming actress that I think she does a good job. She's like, as the main girl, right?
I've never seen that.
Yeah. No, I wouldn't think either of you have. I know other people listening would have known her.
You are correct. I don't know. Is
she with Reese Witherspoon there? Is that
no,
the one?
Keira Knightley.
Okay, yeah. I think it looks cool.
Did not
it looks,
know that this was a thing until right
yeah,
now.
Yeah, there's a huge live action Nutcracker, not coming out at Christmas, by the way, coming out in November. So that's whatever.
Oh, well Thanksgiving.
I think that's usually when Nutcracker performances start.
Oh, okay. So, big cast like Helen Mirren, Morgan Freeman, Miranda Hart and stuff. But yeah, that's another live action one that they have coming out that looks honestly quite terrifying.
It does. It looks like very like the bad remakes of Alice in Wonderland with Johnny Depp.
Yeah, I think that's what they were. Yeah, I think there's definitely an Alice vibe.
Like even
going
literally
on there.
The last shot of her, I think it was the exact same shot that they did of Alice in Wonderland for every promo.
Did it not feel like there were like five of those Alice in Wonderland movies? There were only two, but it really felt like they were just never going to end. It was kind of crazy.
This is literally Alice in Wonderland.
You know, I thought it looked okay. Maybe I'm just a sucker for Narnia like scenes, but she kind of walks through a closet and goes into the snow at one point, I think.
Yeah.
And I was like, yeah. And I thought that was great because,
but
like, I've always wanted
by
that in
herself?
Real life. Huh?
She's supposed to be escorted to the land with the Nutcracker.
With the Nutcracker.
Yeah. That's
maybe he's just a little bit ahead of her
point.
At that time. I'm not sure.
I don't like
see
this.
Him in the shot.
I love the Nutcracker. Like, love it. And I think there's so much darkness the Nutcracker. And it literally says in the trailer, like, has a dark side. Yeah, but Disney dark side is not the dark side I want.
No, that's true. It does look pretty dark for a Disney movie, but I think the show is creepier than that.
Yeah, but I think it's doing darkness in, like, the way that they thought they were doing darkness with Alice in Wonderland, which is too much CGI with a filter on it. Like there's, I want to say Disney's not the right production company for this.
Oh, you know, I would probably agree with you, but it's certainly on the way.
Oh,
so
yeah,
here it comes.
I can't believe that's a thing. Now I'm mad about it.
Sorry. Okay. So we can move on if you want to, now that we've thoroughly expressed our feelings about Disney's quote-unquote live-action adventures.
Well, we could talk about someone else's live-action adventures, which are going to be so good because
Oh, my God, yeah. Yeah, so speaking of, of Lin-Manuel Miranda in his, you know, taking over as Dick Van Dyke's, well, not Dick Van Dyke's role, but like the, you know, the savvy British sidekick of in Mary Poppins. He's also been allegedly cast in something else, and there's been no official announcement of this, but it was leaked as an exclusive by the guy who does all of the theatre news in the UK, like one of the biggest kind of, I don't know, whatever you want to call him, theatre pundit or whatever, and basically leaked the news that the BBC adaptation of his Dark Materials book series is underway, which has been sort of, you know, quietly being worked on and talked about for a long time. You know, people who have not read this book series, A, you are wasting your life. Wasting your life. But B, you may remember 10 years or so there was a movie that came out called The Golden Compass, which was nearly universally slated as the worst adaptation of an important text in recent years, probably on par with the Avatar, The Last Airbender movie adaptation.
Oof.
But yeah, definitely on par with that. I'd give it
really that. Bad, and I can't even begin to talk about how bad it was because it ends. They sanitize the ending in a way that, like, is like sacrilegious to the point of these books because they are such a commentary on so many things about, you know, about the characters, about the and about all sorts of things, religion and stuff. And they, the end of the Golden Compass movie, basically they clip off the ending without the actual hard-hitting part of the ending of the first book in this trilogy. Let's forget about that. But if you knew that movie, little girl, talking bears, demons, D-A-E, not evil demons, you will have sort of come across this in some way. Mitch, if you haven't, I'll explain it better in a minute.
No, I have. It's Daniel Craig, right?
Yes, yeah, that's right, and Nicole Kidman.
Right.
So yeah, the big clincher in that is that, like, spoiler alert, Daniel Craig plays Lyra, the main character, Lord Asriel, who she thinks is her uncle but is actually her father. The whole point of the end of that first book is that they're trying to open a he's trying to prove the existence of, like, different universes, like parallel universes, and basically kills her friend to do it, the friend that she's been, like, trekking across the world trying to rescue. Asriel uses the friend in his experiment, like, severing his connection to his demon, which is like a soul spirit animal thing that they have. It's a part of their consciousness that appears separately to them as an animal that sort of represents them. Anyway, kills the kid and the demon by separating their link magically to open this parallel world. The movie doesn't include the fact that he does this. Yeah. And this pisses...
Oh, my God.
that's the thing. The movie's just like, oh, Lyra's in the new world. How nice. And it sanitizes the fact that Asriel killed her friend to do it. Anyway, point is, movie failed, didn't get a sequel, was very... a couple of things about it were okay, but in general... it needs to die. BBC has been working on a mini-series adaptation of his Dark Materials books. And there have been a couple of announcements this week about the casting. Again, not from the production companies, and no one who's involved has been like, yeah, actually that's true, because I guess they're like under wraps. But if this leak is true, we have Lyra being played by a little girl called Daphne Keene, who, if you've seen Logan, was Laura in Logan. And that's that's what it really all hinges around, in that she is the lead character, and that, instead of the girl that they had in the first movie, who was, you know, very well presented, like perfect curled hair, kind of little wide-eyed girl, Lyra is a dickhead and she's a little wild brat. And so the fact that they've played this girl who has this, they've cast this girl with this very informed performance as Laura in Logan is perfect, because Lyra is a sociopath. She's a little psycho. She's manipulative, very clever. And she's not evil or anything. She's just a harsh kid and very wild and sort of dead-eyed. And so Laura is, this Daphne Keene as Laura is just the perfect performance to inform that. But the other name that was announced that they leaked was Lin-Manuel Miranda, who is a huge fan of these books, by the way, has actually written a song. One of the songs in the Heights is actually based on his emotions while reading these books.
Oh, which one?
Do you know In the Heights?
More than I should.
Okay. It's the song at the end between Nina and Benny. I think it's called When the Sun Goes Down, like kind of when they decide to split up. It's based, that song is based on his emotional empathy for the ending of this trilogy of books.
Yeah.
So there's that. Anyway, he's been cast as probably my favorite character in the series, called Lee Scoresby, who is an adventurer, an American adventurer from Texas who travels around the world by a hot air balloon, like he's an aeronaut. It's sort of a steampunk world. It's kind of like they have different technology. But he is one of the greatest characters in the book, very, very close to Lyra, the child, and also he's one of the characters that has the most drawn out, like, point of view characters that has, like, the most pointed, drawn out emotional death scene. Spoiler alert, these books have been out for like 20 years.
Yeah, I was gonna say,
you have to read the books, like, you just anyway, his death scene and his relationship with his demon, it's called Hester, a hare, is like one of the strongest, like, emotional points of the series. And Lin-Manuel Miranda is not exactly the face that I ever would have pictured for.
No.
Like, he's kind of meant to be this older, grizzled, kind of tall, rangy, like Texan ranch kind of guy. But it doesn't matter, because as soon as they said this, the Venn diagram of people that are both aware of Lee Scoresby and aware of Lin-Manuel Miranda were just like, oh no.
Yeah.
Oh no. This is very bad. Because this performance is going to ruin you.
Yeah. I'm actually scrolling back to see what I tweeted the day the news came out, because it was just so, I was so taken aback. Oh, I said, high on the list of things I didn't expect to have to process tonight, Lee scores me.
Yeah, it's just...
It was a lot.
Like, this is a man who wrote Dear Theodosia about his dog, and so the idea of this character's connection to other people in this universe, and the idea of his connection to Hester, his demon, is like, there is not, I would have never thought it in a million years, but there is not a better person alive to do it. And I so hope this is real. Like, I don't know why they would leak this if it wasn't real. The guy is an impeccable source, but Lynn, you know, would obviously have to move back to the UK for the filming. Or wherever it is they're going to film. But he is so, I don't know. Brittany, I know that you have a few feelings about this, so please explain to these people why this is important.
I think the real reason why it's important is exactly what you touched on at the end there, is that this is not the person I would have ever even considered in a dream casting role. Actually, the only person that I could ever really think of in this role is, like, that guy, the other Ron, who comes in for in Parks and Rec, like the when they incorporate the two towns together, it's the other Ron.
I kind of could have seen like a Woody Harrelson.
Exactly like Woody.
Yeah, Harrelson. Like a what's his face in Hunger Games that he played like that. It's that. It's sort of that kind of character, though he's not as drunk and angry. Like yeah, he's kind of a Haymitch, but he's not as drunk and angry.
Exactly.
Yeah,
but he is like that person who like when you see him. Or, like, obviously not see him, but, like, when you watch him and he has that little bit of a turn, like, you know, like, where he lets them in and shows that he cares, it's, like, the most heart-wrenching thing in the world. Like, he's basically the Ron Swanson of these books, now that I'm stuck on Parks and Rec. just when he gives a little, he's actually giving so much, and he is so connected to his checking on his balloon. And when Lynn was announced, it was just like that moment of like, huh, like that works in a very weird way that I wasn't expecting it to work, because, you know, if you ignore the film like I have for many years, I just reread the series this summer. I just read Book of Dust when it came out in October.
Oh, and I haven't read it yet. Leo has, and it's just sitting on my shelf being like, I can't handle this. But this is Leo's like number one thing in the world. Like this is her absolute number one like fictional attachment in the world.
So like when I was rereading the books this summer ahead of the Book of Dust coming out, I was like, you know, you're drawn back into this world and you get reconnected with these characters and they never really go away. Like it's sort of like, this series is not in the, like, ever-present, like, in-your-face world as Harry Potter is.
Yeah, where it's not, literally, like, pop culture reference every second.
Exactly, but and it's not every, but I think it's as important to me personally as Harry Potter.
I think, and I actually had this conversation with my friend Jonathan, who is a rare book dealer. The very first time I met him, literally when I walked into his shop about 10 years ago, the very, very first time I met him, we were talking about like books that will like endure from like generations, like, you know, like in 50 years or 100 years, like, you know, a couple of books per decade that are like known as like the classics, if you know what I mean. And I think Harry Potter will obviously endure because what it's like done for, you know, for pop culture and reading and children and everything. But I think this series is probably the number one like literary classic that will of this generation, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, but like it's not. And I don't know because I haven't really been anywhere else. But from my experience, like even growing up reading these books, it didn't feel like it ever hit America. Like
it possibly didn't. I mean, the book of you should have seen the Book of Dust release parties in the UK. Like they were freaking midnight release like, parties. But
I feel like there was nothing here, and I think that. There's a huge audience because people have read them, but I think it's one of those series where people are like, oh, I read this when I was a kid, and like that's it. Ugh. But like I think it's stuck with me mainly because of characters like Lee and because Lyra is a character like you read to hate almost.
And yeah.
It's not like, I mean, as I got older, I kind of read to hate Harry a little bit, but I've also grown to have a lot more sympathy.
Oh, Harry is much more likable.
Exactly. So, like, Harry's like a likable lead of a franchise, and Lyra like,
is not likable until you get her from Will's perspective.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. So, with his Dark Materials coming to life in a new way, and like trying to get new faces to ones that haven't been altered in a very long time in my head. It's a very interesting process because like when I was young and Harry Potter, you know, I had the first three and then the movie came out. So like I was younger though, you know, like the images were like free floating and whatever. And I'm like, oh, but now I see Hogwarts and that's the image that came back to the books with me because new books were coming out as it was being produced and put in front of me in a different medium. Whereas this is challenging something that's been in my head for like 20 plus years. So it's having Lynn cast as Lee is something that's like taking me aback, but also making sense.
Yeah, it's that Lynn's face is just a total wild card. And the fact that he's, you know, the fact that he's like Hispanic, like as well, the fact that he's Latino, which can totally work. Like if he's, even if he's still meant to be like from Texas, there's obviously a lot of Mexican immigration and a lot of, you know, Lynn himself is not Mexican, but there is total plausibility for the, what we'll call quote unquote race bending. Lyra's face, like Daphne Keene is a British and Spanish. And while I'm pretty sure in the book she was meant to be very Anglo-Saxon English, her face, like her face and her eyes is very close to what I've always seen for Lyra, like much more than the girl that they cast in the first movie. And, yeah, if this is what they're going towards, then I'm just like, I can't wait to see what else they've got up their sleeve, if you know what I mean. It's just going to be, this is the perfect soul of it. What they have captured, the soul of it in what we know so far. And these books, yeah, I mean, I actually studied in the America, much like Harry Potter, the first book was published as The Golden Compass, which is not actually the name of it. The actual name of it is Northern Lights. But I think they did that because of the pattern of the naming of the other books. But I did Northern Lights in school. Like it was what I discovered these books because it was actually an assigned text in my English, like literacy and English class. So yeah, I think that they are pretty esteemed. I don't know how common knowledge they are in America. In fandom, they're conceptually quite common knowledge because a demon AU is a big trope for any fandom, like with fan fiction and stuff. Oh, yeah. So like a demon AU in like, you know, that they're in a world where people have demons and trying to figuring out the demon of like any a character or yourself or whatever is much akin to, you know, kids trying to place other characters or themselves in a Hogwarts house, except much more personal. But so the concept of demons, which comes from this universe as a kind of soulmate spirit animal representation of self that just like, you know, is a part of you and is with you all the time, is a big concept that is transferred to lots of other places. But I don't know how many people will read like a demon assignment in the Captain America fandom and actually have read his Dark Materials to understand like the deeper meaning of it.
I was going to say, in terms of it being still relevant in terms of pop culture, I wouldn't go as far as to say that the Pokemon series was inspired by this book. I think it could still be a different idea. But I do think what you're talking about in fandom of like deciding what creature follows you around and is like your spirit animal, yeah, that's a pretty common thing.
It's not quite the same. Like a Pokemon is its own self, right?
Kind of. They play it off like your best friends, your soulmates, but they're definitely not of the same soul, no.
Okay, a demon is born with you. Like, it is like a part of your brain that's outside your body, basically.
Pokemon feels like a twist of it.
Yeah, and I think Pokemon might even outdate it. I don't know. Like, I think the idea of, like, a familiar or a spirit animal and all of that is true. This is just a different twist. And it's to show the difference between the worlds, because the first book is entirely set in Lyra's world where that is normal, like where everyone has a demon, like and that they have, you know, different technological advancements and stuff like that. It's still this world. It's still set in the UK. But then as the series goes on, you learn that the entire point of what they've been doing is to prove that there are, like, layers of different worlds, and part of it is set in this real world where people don't have demons and all sorts. And I assume they're going to film a lot of that on location in Oxford, where it's set and stuff like that. So yeah,
at least the beginning. I think like they're doing a lot of it in Wales.
Yeah, like the landscape stuff. But yeah. I actually have a picture, and I just found this because my bathroom flooded the other day. Not bathroom, laundry.
No. I was like, you had not two bathroom. Floods?
No. It was the flood, in capital letters, the flood. The boxes I was pulling out, I found some photos of, I have a photo of myself on, this will mean everything to people and know what I'm talking about and nothing to people that don't. Photo of myself on the bench in the Oxford Botanical Gardens, and there are people like not graffitied it, but like carved into the wood, like their names and stuff like that, like the characters' names, and like they do like a midsummer party there every year, like for the fandom and stuff like that.
Oh,
in Oxford, and so that's like
I'm reading a book set in Oxford right now, and it's like killing my soul because it's I just want to go.
You should come. You should go there at one point.
I will try to.
Anyway, so that's my hype, is that this, if this ends up not being true, I will have to die, but it would, you know, I think that this is really random to pull out of nowhere, so I'm hoping that it is 100% true.
If it turns out to be not true, Lynn might die.
Oh, my God. Yeah, that's the thing. I can't wait till he talks about it, because he is just going to he's going to die. Like, he just loves this so much. And so to have that level of investment from him is really important. But like, now that we've had this wild card, like, what can you picture for anyone else?
I just found something kind of heartbreaking about the Golden Compass. According to the Wikipedia page for the Golden Compass video game, you'll find some footage.
What?
Not sure. I know.
Why is there a video
game? Oh, there's the movie tie-in.
This does not need a video game. Anyway, carry on.
Movie tie-in. The Wikipedia page says, the game was released prior to the film and features a slightly different sequence of events more toward the end of the story, as well as additional footage at the end of the game not seen in the film. This was due to a last-minute re-edit of the last half an hour of the film by New Line Cinema, which could not be incorporated into the game as it was based off the shooting script. There's an interview that I will link in the show notes for anyone curious about what this may be, because apparently, Natalie, you might have had your wish of it being killing the best friend to have every, I don't know. I don't really know, but maybe someone else can dig into this and find the conspiracy.
That sounds about right.
It sounds like that's a thing that happened. There's a total rewrite.
It sounds
here.
Like the studio. They're also very, very, very anti-religion. So that may be why they didn't take off in the USA as a white. Mm-hmm. Like that it feels like we studied them in school at my Catholic high school. But but I feel like that maybe some Americans might want this to be the kind of book that's banned, because it's literally about like the corruption of the church and the you know, the twisting and the abuse of religion. Like, that is a predominant theme of the books. So yeah.
I was thinking,
maybe that's why they didn't go well in America.
I was trying to like think of, like, you know, there are certain characters that I just can't bring myself to ever cast. Like, I don't ever need to know who's going to play them until they're actually announced. But John Fa is one I'm thinking of a lot, because I feel like that's going to be majorly important to me for some reason. Like, on this reread this summer, I was just like, I mean, you know, you have your normal fangirl moments, but like, I don't know, John Fa, like, I thought a lot about him while I was reading. So I don't know who I would want to play.
I will never get my wish for Will, because my wish for Will is Dominic Cooper 20 years ago.
Yeah.
Because wow. he played him in the theater. The National Theater did like a puppet production of his Dark Materials.
Uh-huh.
And he was Will, and Sam Barnett was Pan.
Oh my god.
Yeah. And I believe Russell Tovey was Roger. This is how the National Theatre got them for the History Boys, because they had been in this His Dark Materials production. And yeah, Dom was Will, and he was probably about 18. Oh, the kid is meant to be 12, but it was like an all adults production. And yeah, so that was good. But there have been a couple of other kids I wouldn't have minded. Again, they've all aged out. Like Skandar Keynes from the Lion, the Witch and Wardrobe adaptation, he would have been okay. I know it's going to be some kid that I've never heard of, I suppose, but that's fine.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. It's like everyone who I ever would really have originally wanted with. Can't play these characters because they're so young.
Yeah, but I think Azrael and Mrs. Coulter and
I hope they don't go with like a huge name for like Mrs. Coulter, like. I feel like there are so many great actresses.
I think it's going to be like a UK, you know, like theater actress.
Yeah, and that's what I want. Like, I don't want a ton of, like, I want more theater people.
Yeah, as opposed to like Nicole Kidman.
Yeah, Lynn is like, he straddles the line because I feel like he's just so in, he is a theater person, bleeds theater, but like, you know, like he's just so in the limelight right now that it's like, hard to keep him in that classification.
And well, he's also one of the only Americans. Like, that's the thing. I think most of them are going to have to be British, you know, like, and hopefully that goes our way. But I don't know. Interestingly, I don't know. We'll see, I guess. I don't know. Maybe some... Yeah, the BBC's got its cupboard of actors, you know, it'll pull some people out. Like, it'll be fine.
It'll be fine. To, like, dust some people off after the Downton Abbey movie, and they'll be fine.
Yeah. Oh, she'd be freaking good as Mrs. Coulter, Lady Mary.
Oh, wow.
She would, that, I could get behind that. Though if they're going to keep Daphne's as mixed race, one of the parents will need to be, you know, Spanish of some description, and they're both meant to be from British aristocracy, so I don't know. They'll make it work. It's a total AU. It'll be fine. But yeah, Lady Mary wouldn't say no to that as a Mrs. Coulter. But anyway, we'll move on, shall we?
This is now we're deep into fantasy casting. We got to move on.
I'm just very thrilled about this. Anyway, Mitch, sorry about that. Let's move on to your hype.
Not a problem. So my hype is Jessica Jones season 2, which is roughly spoiler free. I'll stick conceptual because I haven't seen the entirety of it on purpose. I do kind of want to talk about it as I watched it, and I was happy to, maybe talk about the whole thing if I had, but I'm just slowly getting through it, not binging it horribly, like one episode a night, maybe two. And I wanted to give a very brief shout out to all of the things that I loved that I will not be able to talk about because there are simply too many things. Like, literally, it was hard to think of something I hated because I loved like five things in a row. The movie Annihilation with Natalie Portman, Black Panther, the movie, a new Smash Bros. Game for Nintendo Switch was announced, which is Natalie full well knows by now is the horrible crack that it is to me. Now you're fully aware, I suppose. And then I watched a gambling anime called Kekaguri, and it is beyond. It's a Netflix original. Back to this Netflix original, though. There is season 2 of Jessica Jones that came out on International Women's Day 2018, which I thought was a great way of ushering in a wonderful year of women who know how to get stuff done. The reason that this show works so well is because it relies so heavily on its female leads being people, not being females. It doesn't always have to romance or make it like hanging out with the girls, which it can do, but it makes it like they're the heroes. They're the people who will figure this stuff out. The men and the other women even will not, because they are like the top tier. It's not just Jessica. She has her friend Trish, and it's to the point where like you can see where like Trish crosses the line to being like a little bit obnoxious about it. Like she determines that a lot is like sexist when it's not. And I think that they're kind of pushing back against that trope, saying like, ha, isn't it funny how like the women are ruling the world and the men have nothing. I don't know, whatever they're doing there. I thought it was supposed to be funny and it worked. But for Jessica, she's that kind of unapologetic hero that I appreciate, especially because Kristen Ritter plays her with such an honesty. And she plays her as an alcoholic, which I love alcoholics on TV. Like I love, like Shameless is one of my favorite shows of all time right now because of the alcoholic father. I love seeing how characters can like act in their day-to-day life, being drunk at that time, but being so good at it that you don't know. So playing that kind of subtlety, it's really exciting to me. And my favorite part about what's going on with these two main characters, Jessica and Trish, is kind of going back to a review that I read about the Black Panther. I tried to find the review. I'll keep digging. I believe it was a snippet from Rotten Tomatoes, but it stated that a Black Panther, the characters that are both good and bad, are able to be multiple things at once, like a king and a failure or whatever they had. And here they have the same kind of thing because they have Jessica who plays like this really cynical, angry drunk, right? But then she has this nice soft side to her. And I think the best way to kind of wrap up my feelings about Jessica and why I think they do her character so amazingly is something that she said in one of the episodes I watched recently, where she just said that the line keeps moving and I keep stepping over it. I think that's poignant. I think that works. And I think it's such real writing, all of what they're doing with Trish and Jess. And I honestly couldn't give a rat's ass that David Tennant's not in this episode because I thought he was going to make or break it because I think he's a great actor personally. His character is not, as far as I know, in season two, but they didn't need it. They didn't need a surround around a villain of any sort for season two because they were able to take the arcs of Jessica and Trish and make them the most important and intriguing parts. And honestly, they're much more interesting than having a main series villain going on. They're like, you're so worried for them that you don't even care that they're like their fight against the super villain of this season doesn't even seem to be as driving as much as I'm like, oh my God, their relationship. And they're just friends, right? But still, like, it's to that intensity. It's something that I would recommend people to check out if they liked, maybe even Team Wolf, Natalie, because it harkens back to something you referenced that I often bring up, that was if a supernatural show is very supernatural, it usually does its real world stuff really well and really realistic.
Yeah, that's very common with genre, where the heightened element is the, you know, is the world building, and so that the character work is more natural.
It is here. It absolutely is. It's beautiful. There's such realism to like injuries of like normal humans or even Jessica that you feel like the emotional and the physical torment for these characters. I think it's all in the writing. And I do think that Kristen Ritter does a great job of carrying the show. Like I said, David Tennant, I thought was a lot of that before, but it was all her. Now that I'm coming to see her in season two alone, she was probably playing off of him. I think she's always been the mainstay actor of this show, and it makes it worth watching if you haven't checked it out.
I have not seen any of the Marvel television series, actually, which is odd. But I don't know. I don't like noir. So I got very bogged down trying to watch Daredevil and then gave up, basically. So I haven't seen, and because I'm like so into continuity, like all of these, you know, like this, you know, Daredevil to Jessica Jones and Luke Cage and Iron Fist, and I'm like, it's too many. But I do want to watch Jessica Jones. Some of the writers and directors of this show, this season especially, are writers and directors who I know from other shows, but who have never worked on a female-led, or maybe they, you know, not a female-led show of this high profile, like female writers who have been, you know, the only girl in a writer's room, and female directors as well. And so I'm quite keen to see that, because I know they consciously amassed like a nearly all female team.
It shows, Natalie, honestly, because it's not that typical a female written by a male show or directed by or created by, it doesn't feel that way at all. And it's such a breath of fresh air. It's amazing. It feels like Black Panther was in terms of it feeling like an authentic representation of Black characters. This is an authentic representation of females, superpowered females.
Well, yeah, because my other favorite television show currently airing is a BBC show that is like I think like there's only two episodes of the entire series, and it's got seven seasons, that didn't have a female writer, a female director, or both. It is such a women-centric show. It's called Call the Midwife, and it is not in any way a supernatural show. It's a show about the 1950s and 60s East End of London, and based around like a team of nurses and nuns as well. The nuns are cool. Don't worry about it. And it is, yeah, it's my favorite show. It only airs for like 8 weeks a year, and then you have to wait 9 months for more because that's the BBC.
Yeah,
but it's completely female led. Not all the stories are female led. There are a few male characters or male patients, but it is, you know, these female, you know, healthcare professionals, and about every social issue you could ever dream of, you know, appears in an episode, especially showing how times have changed about like even the development of like the NHS, which is their socialized government funded healthcare, and the, you know, different, the changing reactions to like homosexuality. And it's got like the best, like slow burn, like subtleties with the characters. But the thing is, like, watching these, all of these women characters, the writing for them is so different, and like you pick up threads like with more empathy, at least I do, than a lot of other shows that I've watched. Like, it just feels like you're watching like deeper and realer behavior. And and I think that is a product of the female-led show being female-led behind the behind the scenes as well. So while it's a very different concept to Jessica Jones, it's very similar in that they are really dedicated to telling these stories honestly by women, you know, about women. And yeah, so it's a bit of a flip side recommendation if you kind of like that element of Jessica Jones.
Totally. And I'm not sure if the production team, actually, I kind of remotely knew about Jessica Jones's production team being very women led, but I'm not sure about too much of Black Panthers. I literally have read nothing about Black Panther going in. I don't even think I saw.
It's Black Panther in terms of Black African culture. Yes. Everyone who's anyone on that film was also Black.
Well, my point to that is that there's a scene with Danai Gurira and Lupita Nyong'o, who, I'm sorry if I mispronounced her name, I never said it out loud, only read it, that they have a scene together that feels like it was written by a woman, for the fact that it was very powerful, super-powered ninja women who are using their emotions as their strengths as opposed to their, like, their fists, in a way that I don't think has been done very often. And it's also done very often in Jessica Jones too, where it's like, yeah, we have the threat of violence that because we're superpowered or whatever skilled, but we're using like our wits and our empathy to get through our message here. So if you liked that scene, if you know what I'm talking about, if you've seen Black Panther, then I won't spoil it when and where that happens, I guess, but you'll know when you see it. Then I think that's another reason you might love Jessica Jones for the same way.
Yeah, I do actually want to watch it. I just don't know how much of a, like, information you need from the other 500 Marvel series.
No, you don't. It's only that if you want more of her, watch The Defenders, because if you didn't like noir of Daredevil, you're fine, because they're not all noir, which I don't think was your point, but I'm saying, like, they're very defined in their tones. Even in The Defenders, they have different, like, intro shots so that you immediately know who the story is, because it's defined by, like, the art style, right? Like, the cinematography is kind of everywhere in The Defenders because of that. But that means that Jessica Jones, I think it fits more of like, it is a bit noir still, but I get a lot of Veronica Mars feelings for good reason. She is a PI, and I like that. It makes me feel like I'm getting a slice of her character Gia. If you guys remember, do you read Veronica Mars?
No.
I don't think you were rewatchable.
No, I wasn't.
No, well, Kristen Ritter played like a bit part on Veronica Mars, and now she's the big PI, and it's great. So
I do love her, and Don't Trust the Bitch
she's great.
is my favorite failed comedy of all time. So
I think you, Natalie, would be okay seeing I know what you mean about the continuity. You'd be okay seeing just season one and then Defenders and then season two. Defenders is a mess that is good and bad in a lot of weird ways. But like I said, just watch it for Jessica because her story continues there. And that's the most important part, if you ask me. Daredevil is a massive undertaking. I don't blame you for not wanting to get into that. That's a whole different thing. But no, yeah, I know what you mean because it's tough to get into these Marvel series because... Britt, I don't know if you've heard any rewatchables recently or you've been on them where it describes that I've only been watching the latest American Horror Stories as they come out on Netflix in the hopes that one day Jessica Lange comes back, meaning that I won't watch just her season if she ever does. I know she's not gonna because I don't want to miss any of the continuity. I'm with you, Natalie. I'm that strong about continuity, but I'm going to let you release yourself just a little bit here to at least try Jessica Jones season one because that one was, I think, as bubbly as it can be. Kind of. There's like one character crossover, but you'll survive. Maybe just ask questions as you go along, but
I do want to watch it, so yeah. We shall manage that at some point.
I should probably watch the original Iron Man before I watch any of the Marvel Netflix. I made it this far without watching the original Iron Man. I think I could keep going.
Poor Karen.
The original Thor. It's weird.
So there's just so much that I missed that I feel like starting with like half of Iron Man 3, Winter Soldier. I think that that's just a good launch point for me. Oh, no. I still haven't seen the first Avengers.
Wow.
You should see the first Captain America, the period drama one.
Oh, I've tried so many times. I've seen the first half of Cap a million times up until the point where he goes to save Bucky in the middle of the movie. I've never seen past that.
Well, that's
just
because
you got bored or something happened.
It's like, I always see the same part on TV and I'm like, I refuse to watch this again. Cause I'm always get to the part where it's Stanley Tucci with his horrible German accent trying to talk.
But he's such a nice character. I love Stanley Tucci. He should be in his Dark Materials.
He could play anyone. I don't care who he plays. He could play innocent bystander number 3 or one of the Oxford professors.
I guess this is a bonus hype that I just saw for the, I know before I say this, what this is. I never seen The Devil Wears Prada and I finally watched it and I fell in love.
The Tucci at his best.
No, I did. And it is just because it's just so relatable.
Every single scene is relatable.
Because I love when Meryl Streep's like, go get the last Harry Potter book. And she does. It's just like, oof. I can't get enough. It's so, yeah, you're right. Stanley Tucci there is, he's at a lot of his peak. I actually think it became more familiar with him from, wasn't it The Hunger Games?
Caesar.
Senna or someone crazy with a lot of hair. Yeah, yeah. So back to that, Jessica Jones, Marvel, jump in if you want a crazy ride. I didn't know what I was doing when I watched that first Avengers movie, Natalie, and you were like, oh my God, you don't know who Loki is. But now, I still haven't seen Thor 1, but I feel like I know who Loki is.
Thor 1 was the first Marvel movie ever.
He's been in like 6 Marvel movies, it feels like.
Yeah, he's a light character. Like,
I know, I should pay more attention to him, but I just can't seem to care about Thor. I don't know why, I haven't seen the third, I've only seen the second.
Oh, but no, that's the worst one.
Yeah?
Thor 2 is the worst.
I like Thor 2, I cried in it.
I did not like it at all. I liked the first Thor, but Thor Ragnarok is a whole nother level of cinematic genius. So
it's very strange.
Yeah, it's very strange. I highly recommend it. I saw it like 3 times in the theaters.
Well, if I had to have a mini gripe here, along with the fact that I'm loving Jessica Jones and all that Marvel's producing, I'm also hating it because it's not just that Disney is the powerhouse that it is with its Star Wars, with its remake live action Lion Kings and everything. It's that they have the Marvel thing and they have TV shows for it. And I will not watch Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Yeah, there's just too much going on in terms of Disney that I want to love it all. I do. And
Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is also part of the MCU.
Yes. Yes, I know, and it frustrates me that I can't get my head into it because it's too much, Natalie. That's my mini gripe. It's that there's way so much going on. How did they not decide to maybe hold it back a little bit? Are they afraid of losing hype? Like, aren't there like two mainstay Marvel movies coming out and these like three new seasons of Marvel shows coming out?
Do you know how many they're replicating the source material? Do you know how many comics like run in concurrently? Like hundreds of the same universe where everything is happening across the entire universe. And like something happens in one issue of one series is continued in the next issue of a totally different series. Like, they're just making a mess like comics have made a mess, basically.
They're like just like giant clickbait in a way that I almost like.
Yeah, it's sort of like, oh, we finally figured out the live action portion of this. Here we go. Whereas in terms of the Marvel Cinematic Universe, the Disney
it's not just
cinematic
like,
live action universe needs a little bit of work, but we're going to get there with Christopher Robin, so it's going to be fine.
It's just interesting to serialize everything and have it tie into each other. It's so that, you know, you're invested, you know, so that you're staying within the pool, you know. It's like you're, because, you know, if you might miss something of one with the other, like it's all, for it all to be in the same universe is
it's exhausting.
Well, it's just not really done for television and screen. Like, it's done, it is comics on screen. It's exactly what it is. And I don't know if there have been any series, any visual series. Even the movies are serialized. It's just waiting for a really long time for a new episode of a television show, you know? Like,
it is.
And Sherlock.
Except with like 5,000 times more output all over the
waiting for more Sherlock, because Sherlock and Watt, they're both in the Marvel Cinematic Universe now, so we can't get either of them back.
This is a total tangent, but this serialization of viewing is, I mean, if you love the universe, it's a good thing, but it is a lot. And it's interesting that they felt confident. It used to be a hindrance. It used to be a hindrance to create something where you needed backstory elsewhere, if you know what I mean. That used to be like a bad selling point because they wanted, you know, viewers to be episode by episode, could just drop in, drop out. But obviously with Netflix, you know, that's not how the show is designed. Obviously not all of it's on Netflix, like Agent Carter and, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. were on regular television.
Yeah.
But the idea is, you know, that it's less of a risk now to produce something where people are need to be invested already. And, you know, you don't need to be invested already. You know, some Marvel movies are good for some people and some for others, but it's a circumstance where it used to be the best possible option was for it to hit, with people who didn't need to know anything. And now they realize that people actually want more of the universe. And so they're willing to make more and more things that require, you know, some element of prior knowledge. And that used to be like a huge no-go zone, but now it's like a plus.
Yeah, and they're even expanding because they're doing Cloak and Dagger on Freeform, which is obviously owned by Disney. But, I mean, they're trying all networks and platforms.
It feels like, that's the thing. I think you finally hit it there, that having an ABC Freeform movies and Netflix and or Hulu, there was another show about some Runaways, I think. That's a lot. And just trying to subscribe and watch to all of those things is expensive and time consuming. And you're right, Natalie, I can see why it would be such a no-no. So I'm at the point where I've decided that I may never see Thor's 1 and 3, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., Agent Carter, just the list, because I need to kind of stay solid with what I have right now. And I'm really strong on Jessica Jones and like Scarlet Witch, and like those are my things. So I'm just gonna stick with those. And if I don't get the occasional reference, at least it wasn't talking about New York City blowing up. So I probably didn't miss anything too big.
Yeah, and I think that's where I'm at. It was like for the longest time, I was just like, nope, you know what? I'm not gonna watch any of this, mainly because of the fact that it's too much. And then I got like tickets to go see Infinity War. Not Infinity War, Civil War early. Civil and I was War, like, yeah. Well, I have about 14 hours. What do I need to watch?
I remember that day.
And so Natalie was just like, just watch The Winter Soldier. And I was like, okay.
She's not wrong.
And so I went in having seen Thor and The Winter Soldier, and I was just fine. Like, it was fine. Although,
I mean,
like, and it, you know, there are so many people out there and websites and things and people who could fill you in. Like, I went years without even knowing who the Winter Soldier was. And Natalie took a breath and then filled me in because she couldn't believe it. But that was a real question I'd ask. I'm like, well, who is the Winter Soldier? I learned just by standing next to someone.
Yeah, I mean, I think the kind of difference is, like, that you just might not, like, cry as much at one bit. Because you don't, like, all it is, like, the not real, the surface level, it's not like you're going to be, like, confused. Yeah. It's more like that the hard-hitting stuff just doesn't hit quite as hard because you don't have the historical context. And that's, for me, that's really important. But, like, as in, you won't care as much if you don't know this. But, like, some people don't need to care that much, so it's fine.
Yeah, like, I love Spider-Man Homecoming. But, you know, like, maybe the Tony Stark scenes aren't hitting me as hard as they should. But I get it. I get the context surrounding why Tony's behaving the way he's behaving. But also, I'm here for Tom Holland, like, 1,000%. I mean, so... Yeah. You know, there are the best part, I think, about the Marvel Cinematic Universe and even, like, shows, like, just to circle it back to Jessica Jones and stuff like that, is that there are so many entry points that don't necessarily mean you have to exit either. Like, there's just so many ways you can get into this. You can find your way into the larger universe just by watching Jessica Jones and, like, being really involved in just Marvel Netflix TV, or you can get really involved and, like, you know, start from the very beginning, watch the Avengers, and then go into Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. because of Coulson. Like, you know, like, I don't even know how I knew that name, but I do.
Oh, she knows who Coulson is.
Yeah.
That's impressive. I forgot his name,
I think
too.
It's because I read McCall's headlines all the time.
Yeah, fair enough.
It's really funny that this was supposed to be my mini gripe, and that it just, I should have known. We might as well just call this Can of Worms podcast. That's fine too. But you hit a very if I had to find one last point that I wanted to say about this mini gripe, it's that Quicksilver was in X-Men Alive but dead in MCU, but he was used as the same character.
I honestly, we can't even start about that X-Men because.
That's just confusing.
I wouldn't want to because I know it's a can of worms. I'm saying as a reference point, I think Disney has done a great job of making this as clean as possible with having that whole entire X-Men universe outside of it. I do think if you were to follow it, you weren't going to find many more Quicksilver-y kind of things in there. They've done a good job of making it like one main event affects everyone. And that's, can you imagine writing to that? I couldn't. And they do it very often.
Well, yeah, I mean, the X-Men Fox universe, you know, that I don't know how they both got the rights to Quicksilver because that was meant to avoid, like, that was the whole point that this whole thing was meant to be avoiding. But now there's been the merger anyway, so it's all going to have to be.
I think the term was they couldn't use the word mutant. And
That's right. In Avengers. X-Men. No. In Avengers, they can't use mutant.
Oh, okay. I thought they couldn't call him a mutant. I thought Disney won over and was like, hey, Fox.
No. X-Men have mutants. That's the thing.
I'm like, every X-Men.
Let's not go there.
Closing the can of worms. Closing it.
Well, that's the thing. There's been such a big merger in recent times that they are now going to be incorporating, like, the Avengers world and the X world at some point. So now there is crossover potential. But that's a whole nother story. So anyway, moving on.
That's Jessica Jones.
Oh gosh, I don't even know how long this has been going for. So maybe we should move on to the griping now.
Sure.
Okay. So who wants to go first? I could go first. Go ahead. I was going to say mine does tie into the female perspective a little, as Mitch was trying to say with Jessica Jones.
Yeah, no, go for it.
So my gripe this week is a recent piece of news which has been circulated and become confirmed even by the producers of the show, is that Netflix series The Crown, which is not about X-Men but is about a very powerful woman, The Crown, which has been a very, very acclaimed, you know, lots of awards and lots of binge points, with Claire Foy and Matt Smith as Queen Elizabeth and Prince Philip in the early days of their marriage. The news came out today. No, not today, a couple of days ago, that Claire Foy was paid less per episode than Matt Smith, basically, than her husband in the show. And while this was a show where Matt Smith came in with quite a level of fame and Claire Foy has made her name with the show and was not really known before, the irony of this being a show literally focused on this relationship dynamic of this man, you know, playing second fiddle to this woman because he's marrying the queen and she'll always be superior. And that behind the scenes, like, they were still not like, yeah, we're going to pay the queen the most. That they were going to be like, no, that doesn't matter. She's not the first billing. Like, that she's, you know, it's about the Queen of England, you know, the most powerful person in this show and in, in the society. The themes are all about her having to come first, and they're still paying a man more money than the actress, is just absurd to me. Like, it's shitty in any circumstance. We've been talking about this, you know, like, for so long, this wage disparity. You know, we had, you know, Michelle Williams and Mark What's-His-Face and all the money in the world and that situation. And there's, you know, been some, you know, some other conversations recently about wage disparity just among cast members in general. And my feelings about this are that maybe, you know, that there's this argument that you should make more money, like that you should, you know, that no, it's not that the man has to take a pay cut. It's that the woman should be, you know, they should be pulling more money out of their asses and paying the woman, you know, the same thing or whatever. My opinion on that is really that maybe no one should be making like $20 million an episode or whatever it is that someone makes. Maybe everyone should just get paid a bit less so they can afford to pay everyone equally. For me, you know, that idea of, oh, should so-and-so take less? And the response, no, they should just both get more, you know, what they're worth. I just personally don't think anyone's worth $20 million an episode of television, you know, or whatever it is that you're arguing about. And that's not a slight on anyone. It's just a ridiculous, overblown financial circumstance. Yes, pay equally, but pay less across the board. The demands are getting, you know, ridiculous. And I'm really against that kind of money wastage in general. And I don't really see it as value of worth. Like, it's like, how much money do you need to live on, like, you know, like, to prove that you are what you are? Regardless of that, this circumstance that Matt Smith was getting paid more, and I really like Matt Smith, and often these cast members don't know this. They're not meant to talk about their pay, so it could be that they didn't, you know, that he didn't know he was getting more than her. I don't know. But the fact is that they offered him an amount because he was a name and they offered her less and they both accepted those amounts. And the fact that, yeah, okay, he was the more famous. So what? It's Netflix. They have a lot of money. They have a lot of money to put into whatever they want. And that show was expensive. Like, they did some lavish things that they didn't need to in that show in order to show off how expensive it was. But they still paid her less than him. And I just the irony of it literally being the theme of the show and they still did it was just insane to me. So I'm very unhappy about that situation in general. And, you know, it's also kind of ironic to be talking about the monarchy in that sense, in that they have all of this money that, you know, and historical wealth that potentially socially should be distributed elsewhere. I romanticize the historical monarchy just as a pleasure, but in a practicality, it's kind of, you know, insane. But the fact that this particular circumstance that, yeah, they got a girl who was kind of unknown, but they knew she was going to be playing the queen and was going to be their lead. Why would you ever think that it was appropriate to pay her less than her male co-star who was acting in a role all about how unfair that was? So particularly pissed off about that today. And absolutely ridiculous, and I just don't understand. And they've said on, you know, we admit we did that. Won't happen again. No one will get paid more than the Queen. That's all well and good to Claire Foy. Claire Foy's not playing the Queen exactly anymore. They're doing a time jump. They're doing a time jump, and it's not going to be her anymore. So, like, I would be so offended. I just don't know, like, how you would. How this is in any universe justifiable, and I just don't understand how we've got there, and, like, you know, what values, you know, they had in doing that. Like, in, you know, they had all of the money, they could just needed to distribute it a little bit more fairly, and they've dug themselves into this hole. They look so stupid now, and, you know, because she's got nominated for all these awards, like, and it's just insane. I don't know how they're going to rectify that. You know, like, maybe they should back pay her, but it's just... Even
that feels like a slap in the face, like, oh, you weren't worth it at the time, but now you are.
Yeah, I know. I mean, I agree. Like, it does. And I don't know. It's just ridiculous.
There's no way they can pose it because they've already messed up. It's best that they've been saying recently in the interviews, I'm looking at a BBC article that I'll link, that they were like, yeah, we know we messed up. We're not going to do it again. The Queen will get paid just as much because she's the Queen. Whatever. But still, two seasons in, it took for them to get to that point. And you were right, Natalie. This is, I'm reading a headline from the Daily Beast that said, inside Netflix is $130 million The Crown, the most expensive TV series ever. Yet they can't seem to pay. Like, that's the worst part, that it's the most expensive TV show ever. And they can't shell out that much more to at least make her equal.
I agree. And it's completely ridiculous. And I just don't know how. There's no justifying it in any way. It's just insane.
It makes me happy to have things like Jessica Jones, where I feel like, yes, that's a plus. And then we go down to this, and it's like, oh, we're still here.
It's insane. It's completely insane. And so that's pissed me off today. So, yeah. Great, great news. All right.
I watched up until, okay, this is kind of weird. when Matt Smith was naked, and I was like, that was nice. I guess it can't get any better than that. And then I stopped playing the show.
Oh my God. I mean, I really like the show, but I'm obsessed with the British monarchy history. So then there's a lot of factors in it that are, like, probably really fake. And then there's some that are, like, really true.
It didn't catch my interest. I mean, it's because, like, that was the sexiest moment, because the rest of it is just, like, dying of a coughing blood disease. And I'm like, ooh.
Yeah, it's slow and boring and repressed and political. Yes. And that's, I love period dramas like that. So, yeah.
I can understand the draw. It's not for my interest. I tried to give such an earnest effort, and there was an elephant. And I was like, I think this is meant to be exciting, but it's still kind of dull.
I love it. I love that there was, like, literally an entire episode that was just about fog. I was like, yes,
this and it's is true. What, like, the fog was real. Yeah, it was a real thing.
Yeah. I'm like, this is what I signed up for. And then I watched it with my mom, like, season one, because I think we were both home, like, snowed in one day. And we watched season one in, like, almost a full day. And she was like, oh, what's going to happen? Is this guy going to die? And I'm like, Mom, it's historical. Just Google it. Like, this is, like, literally history has spoiled this for you. She's like, I can't Google anything about the monarchy until this whole series is over. I'm like, oh, my God.
History will spoil me.
I was really intrigued about how much they gave. I haven't watched the second season yet, but the first season, how much they gave to the conflicted perspective of David of the King Edward who abdicated to marry the American. Oh my God. I've seen like 15 different versions of that story in one way or the other. And the conflict they gave to him, like watching her coronation, about how like he was making fun of it, but he was also like devastated. Like, and he's like a little shit, but like, oh, I loved it. Like, I was like, this is really, oh, this is really good. But anyway, it is slow and political, and that's what it's meant to be. But
well, I think I'm in the minority there, because I think most people have matured past the age of needing to have
like explosions, action, or something.
Explosion, romance, like something to draw you in. Like, I think just the fact that it's historical should be interesting to me.
I bet sometimes Karen it is. Hates it. Don't worry.
Oh, yeah. Is she Karen in the same kind of boat? It. Like,
yeah, she loves things to explode. Like, yeah, she doesn't like slow things. So.
Yeah.
That's okay.
I'll try again one day.
If I ever
catch strep or something, I'll sit down. It feels like last time I watched it, I had my tonsils taken out, and it was a good like tonsils taken out show, because you could fall asleep to it because it's just that slow. So maybe that's a good thing.
I really like it, but I'm in the same boat as Nat. I haven't watched the second season yet because it is something that like. I have to know to be in the right mood to watch, and I'm just,
otherwise you'll just tune out.
Yeah. And I just haven't been there yet. So
anyway,
she's very compelling. The actress, that's not Claire Foy.
Oh yeah.
She's so interesting, and that's not anything of it's the writing. That's the slow part, not the acting, I should say.
I mean, I think it's the plot, in that it is a long, boring series about like the minute, like weird things that like are a big deal in this kind of circumstance, but that like, anyway, The Crown. I was very pissed off about this though, because she's so good. And even regardless of that, just the principle that they're making a show about the Queen. And this is anyway. Yes. Who's got another problem to tell us about?
I could talk about The Bachelor.
I am so confused. So, yeah, please do. Yeah.
So, I do not watch The Bachelor, nor do I care that other people do watch The Bachelor. However, I was in Manhattan for technically two of the Nor'easters, but one of them I was staying over because I was attending a conference in the city. So I stayed over because of the snowstorm. And normally when I get up in the morning, I watch the Hallmark Channel while I'm getting ready, because they play I Love Lucy like in the morning. So that's what I watch when I get ready for work. Instead of the news, I get enough of the news and everything all day, every day. So I like my mornings to not stress me out. Anyway, the hotel that I stayed at in Manhattan did not get the Hallmark Channel, so I could not watch I Love Lucy while getting ready for two mornings in a row. Fine, whatever. It just happened to be that I was staying there the week of the Bachelor Live season finale. Now, everyone and their mother, and including tons of people I work with and everyone on the internet, loves The Bachelor. Live tweets The Bachelor, gets angry at The Bachelor, is voting for their favorite woman to win The Bachelor. And I couldn't even tell you the name of the actual Bachelor until now, because The Bachelor had two nights of a live finale that were 3 hours long each. That's 6 hours of content that ABC gives to The Bachelor live finale. Now,
it's so funny.
Live on air, well, no, pre-recorded, The Bachelor picks the woman, proposes, they get engaged. One woman's devastated, the other woman's happy as can be. Before the live finale, this douche, Ari, calls in the girl who he proposed to, his
who's fiance. Ari? Is he the
He's
Bachelor?
The Bachelor. Yeah. See, now I'm in it. Calls in this woman and his fiance and is like, with the cameras on. Now, they've officially wrapped. Like, he's already proposed on The Bachelor. They're engaged. This was going to be the live after show. he broke up with her on camera and said that he just wasn't in love with her and went to the girl he dumped and said, I need to have this shot at love and I'm throwing it away by being with you. And I think I'm going to go with this other girl, Lauren.
Then why didn't he just pick Lauren on the series?
Yeah, you would think. So here I am, a perfectly professional businesswoman getting ready to start my day, yelling
screaming at Michael Strahan
and Ari on TV. And I was furious that a human being would think it's okay to call in cameras to get on tape the fact that he is such a horrible human being that he's breaking up with this girl on camera. And he's like, well, I just wanted America to know that, like, you know, when this news broke that, you know, it wasn't her fault. It was completely my fault. And, you know, she's going to be the next bachelorette. So, like, really, it all worked out for her. And I'm like, screw you for thinking that you are helping this woman go through a really traumatic experience. And now I'm feeling bad for the people who chose to have their lives taped and broadcast on television. And I can't.
Why didn't he pick the girl? Like, are you saying he went to the other finalist?
Yeah.
Then why didn't he just pick her in the first place?
Because he said he was confused.
And
the more he thought about it after the fact, the more he wanted to be with this other girl. But anyway, this was only my gripe because I saw on Facebook a post from Entertainment Weekly saying that Ari and Lauren have officially fled the country. No, they went on vacation to Iceland.
Fled the country.
They went on vacation to Iceland. And you know what? Fled it's your own country. Fault that you feel like you have to flee the country because the cameras are following you. You literally signed a contract that said, I'm fine with the cameras following me. I hate everyone and everything that has to do with this.
I really am not into any reality shows aside from The Great British Bake Off and potentially Nick Offerman and Amy Poehler's new reality show, which looks like The Great British Bake Off for American audiences, where everyone's very nice about their craft projects. But my office that I used to work at was like, they had every freaking, like, they had sweeps. They had like there'd be a poster and they'd like cross it out, you know, yeah, when the next person out. Yeah. And I'm like, no. And every time. And I'm like, doesn't this run for like a year? And each cycle's only like 8 weeks and or whatever. Like, it's not even, I don't know, like 12 weeks or something. And we have the Australian Bachelor and Bachelorette. We have, and the American one. So like, we had, there was never a bachelor-free moment. There was always, like, you know, like, okay, it's American Bachelor. Okay, now it's Australian Bachelorette. Now it's Australian, like, Bachelorette. Like, constantly.
It never ends.
Like, Natalie, they made bunting. There are kits that you can print out that are like, here's your office bachelor decoration kit.
Yeah.
What the fuck?
There's, like, okay, and also, the 2 weeks that the Olympics were on here, there was, like, no new content airing, which makes sense because, like, why compete with Tara Lipinski talking about figure skating? But so like, but ABC literally had every single night the Bachelor Winter Games, like a special. Like, it was every night was a version of The Bachelor, but it was like some different type of Bachelor. And it was on every single night during the Olympics because ABC didn't broadcast any of the sports. So like, I don't know. I do get it because, you know, people work and they need something to come home to that, like, you know, you can just yell at your TV about. And sometimes
do you think it's designed like that? It's designed to like make you angry and invested and cause
drama. Oh, absolutely. But I think that's all reality TV.
I just hate it so much.
I have never been able to get into reality TV. I've watched one season of Survivor and that was the first season. And I watched one season of American Idol and it was the first season. So like, I've never been a reality TV type of person. I'll watch sports, but that's not really reality TV. And like, I was watching The Real Housewives like maybe 10 years ago, but like, you know, and I get that type of TV because sometimes like, I think that's when I turn on like reruns of The Big Bang Theory. That's like what I go to. And it's not to get mad or anything or get, I'm not even really that personally invested, but it's like that unwinding thing that you can watch and stay current on and talk to people about. And it is a very communal activity because it's all over. It's like all people are talking about and live tweeting and getting into it. And I don't have that with like a show like that. Like I don't know, like live, like the shows that I like are not like shows. Like I'm not going to sit here and be like, whoa, twist on the Americans. Like I don't like the shows that I like, love and invest my time in are ones that I invest my time in privately, except for American Gods, which you and I talk about for hours on end. But like, that's a very personal experience. Whereas I think the, like, I just don't have anything like The Bachelor, nor do I think I need it right now. But eventually one day, like, that would kind of be nice to have that little community and be so wrapped up in something with so wrapped up in something so stupid is what I was going to say. But obviously, I mean, it works because I had never seen anything and I was so angry at a man. I wasted so much time being angry at this one human being who I've never seen and or like heard anything about until this one Michael Strahan interview, and it sent me off the edge and I was so mad. But when I went into the conference next morning, I went to my coworker and I said, do you watch The Bachelor? And she was like, no, not really. And I'm like, well, I'm about to tell you what happened on it because I am so mad.
And like, oh my God, worked. You became that guy.
It worked. I became part of the national conversation. And it was like all because of this idiot and what he did on camera. And like, you know what? Just, it's fine.
I guess. I just can't get my head around it. Like, and my office, like, they used to talk about, like, lots and lots of reality shows, like Real Housewives, Shahs of Sunset, whatever that is. Which
oh,
I think
the
is
Shahs
like,
of Sunset. Yeah, that's a Bravo. Bravo original.
Yeah. Anyway, all these different shows and invested in them and talking about, like, their, you know, the people's situations. And I'm like, this is kind of creepy because, yeah, this is the way that I talk about characters, but this is like
real people,
like speculating about real people. And it's both creepy that you're doing it and creepy that they've like put themselves in that situation to be like that. Like, I don't know. I find the attitude of wanting that like kind of very stressful. And as I said, I like the Great British Bake Off. Because it was a friendly, kind competition show. And that's about it. That's literally the only reality competition show I've watched. I watched a couple of seasons of singing, like of Idol, maybe. But, like, years and years ago. But, yeah, I like lifestyle shows. I like shows where they're, like, a, you know, like a non-fiction show where they go around to restaurants or to...
like Trading Places is coming back and I could not be more thrilled,
you know, like real estate, but I don't like any element of competition.
Chip and Joanna are just godsend. Yeah, I know what you mean, Natalie, though. It's rough. Like what you're experiencing, Brittany, is kind of like Kelly Clarkson American Idol feelings, because yes, I wanted her to win, but I also wanted like any other season, like whoever gets like second or third, I'm like, I like you more. Because you're drawn to like the loser here. In my mind, in reality shows, it feels like they're the underdog and like, how dare they? It's tough because then you can't do anything for them.
Like it stresses me out that like either it's real, you know, either these emotions they're experiencing are real.
Yeah.
And therefore it's weird that we are doing it for entertainment, or it's fabricated reality, you know, for drama, especially on like some of the American cooking shows where they're like have like sabotages and stuff, and I'm like, yeah. No. And I just find that like the fake drama very stressful and real drama very creepy for the audience to get involved in. And I don't know, it's definitely not for me, but if I had seen that clip of The Bachelor, I also would have freaking been raging. And then being angry at myself as well. But, yeah, just raging at so many layers of the circumstance, like that he did that and that, you know, he was probably just doing it for the drama and, you know, all it is, you know, whatever it is.
Yeah. But anyway, I wasted a lot of my time being angry at him. So I had to, you know, put it to good use and make it all not lost in vain. I was able to network and socialize with other human beings about it. But, you know, I also got to talk about it on a podcast. So here we are.
You're getting me invested. I've been like investigating this whole time. Such a tool. We've been talking. Such a tool. It's bad.
So it's got like bad. Really like, I like a good like salt and pepper hair. He's got like bad salt and pepper hair. Like just gross. Just go away.
I wonder how one qualifies as the bachelor. It seems, I guess vapid is not even the word I'm looking for, but just sad because it's not like they're really stand up people. If they're doing things like this, they must look for a certain characteristic. That's like, yes, you will bring in numbers because you will cause drama and controversy.
I can't.
Well, allegedly the pattern is now that you become the,
it's sort of like if you lose, then you get to be the next whatever.
But only for the bachelorette. Oh, no. You're a contestant on one, and then if the second runner-up gets another shot at love by being the bachelor of the next season or exactly. whatever.
Wow. Like, it's a never-ending cycle. That's beautiful. And I feel like it
didn't always used to be like that. Like, I feel like they used to just pull people randomly.
I think it really, like, depends on if the, like, audiences are responding to the person in question.
Yeah.
I mean, it's ingenious. It really is. It's not even that it's, I don't know, is it family friendly? Whatever it is, it works. I think it works at the time slot it's at and it has for years. And I'm not going to fault them for working those advertisement dollars like they are. I kudos to whoever thought of the idea. And maybe it's just the implementation that, yes, Natalie, it stresses me out. I'm like, is this real? I don't know. I just, why do you have to do it on live TV? It's just, it's not good. But
you have to talk about something about living not up to expectations. So
yes, let's move on. That was the transition if I've ever heard one. My gripe is the movie Veronica on Netflix. It is spoken purely in Spanish and it's a horror movie. So if you don't like subtitles or horror movies, you're not going to like it. It's not that I didn't like it. That's not the thing. It's that it was so generic that while I loved its cinematography, yes, I know, Natalie, you can roll your eyes at that, but it's true. This movie
fine.
It was beautiful.
If that's what's most important to you, then that's fine.
It was beautiful and just so boring because it was literally like the same like five tropes that I've seen in any other horror movie. They play with a Ouija board. Ooh, she's the... Okay, I'm going to spoil it for anyone who doesn't want to know. You're probably going to just be done. She's the monster in the end. Ooh, never saw that coming. She's possessed. See The Exorcist. Ooh. It goes on like that. It feels like, I know that's really hard to come up with a new topic. It felt like they literally just took like the past like five top grossing horror movies, or maybe just the most generic ones overall. And then we're like, yeah, let's just mash it all together. We're not going to care too much. And the thing is that I don't know if this is just something Netflix does. I don't know if they sprinkle some kind of secret sauce into social media, but there have been so many very infuriating articles to me on social media that I've seen Sharon saying things like, this movie is so scary, people have to turn it off. And that's kind of, once again, hearkening back to The Exorcist, where people were throwing up in The Exorcist, passing out in the aisles. That's kind of where that whole thing started. This movie is nowhere near that quality or that scare. It's quality in terms of, like I said, it's cinematography, but it's not frightening in the same ways because it feels like a very general feel, like they didn't want to commit to any given, like, even like subgenre of horrors. They were just like, yeah, we're gonna take an easy route here. And that's why it's the most frustrating to me, because there seem to be a lot of people out there that just jump on the ship. Maybe it's the people more than the movie, like observing the movie, that are saying like, I just can't stand watching it. It was just so terrifying that I want to be like, okay, then watch the original Blair Witch, because then you're actually going to be terrified because that's real. All right. Don't watch this movie and pretend you're actually scared. Or yes, watch The Exorcist. That one's actually terrifying. Hell, even like the original, like Friday the 13th and Nightmare on Elm Street, those were even more scary than this. I want a return to horror that's original. I want new monsters. I don't want this Ouija board crap coming in anymore. Like, it's been done to death. I don't know where else I need to say than you don't need to start your story with a Ouija board. There are so many other ways you can get into this. You can make it just a random haunting. That's probably scarier. Maybe I should write a horror movie. I don't know. But I think the Ouija board is the part that I'm most frustrated about. Because Natalie, do you remember Shelley Hennig was in a movie called Ouija, just Ouija?
And vaguely, I don't watch horror movies, but yeah, sure.
It's the epitome of what this movie is trying to get into, but it's even worse. Like, that movie was even worse because it didn't have the cinematography to keep it going. I'm going to give this Veronica movie just a little bit of kudos here, because what it does is it kind of has this... I'm so happy that I'm going after the Christopher Robin segment, because it has this Winnie the Pooh effect. I don't know how else to describe it. There are scenes where Veronica is walking, very scared and not knowing where the monster's coming from, because it's her. So she's like walking on a book or like pages and words, and it looks like she's actually walking on the book. And you're like, okay, that's cool enough. But the thing that this movie does really well are its transitions. It goes from like that book to her walking on the street. And I didn't blink. I was just staring at it to try and find it when they were going to do it, because I knew it was up and coming. It's not there. It's amazing. It's weird. It kind of melds your mind in a weird way with like, there's another shot too, where, this is where I wish that we'd focused more. I wish it focused on telling like a more, I don't know if the right word is intuitive or more interesting story about, another pop culture, reference that they're doing here is a coming of age story is equivalent to you being a demon. See Buffy the Vampire Slayer. I don't know, whatever, but there's a cool shot that, happens when she, forgive the crudeness of this all, because it's kind of just stupid. She has her first period and she has a nightmare about it, that a monster's getting her. Ooh, never seen that before. But there's a shot when she wakes up and it's really cool, and I wish they did more of this kind of stuff. They keep on her. You would have to see it. They keep on her as she like sits up in bed, and the camera makes you feel like you're nauseated in a way, and I haven't seen that often. I don't know why. It doesn't seem very complicated. But that kind of thing, it really, that's what drew me in. But whenever they got into this very generic Ouija board possession demon is yourself stalking you in your house stuff, it very much fell flat. So maybe next time that there's a very hyped up movie, it's a indie movie, it's on Netflix, it's a foreign language, great. We're all going to be very excited about it. Hopefully it's better. I really want it to be. I have hope that there's a horror movie out there that could even scare me. I think I see too much of the strings now to really get scared, honestly. But maybe if anyone out there can watch it just looking for the cinematography, you'll appreciate it in that way, knowing that you're not going in it expecting to actually be scared. And then maybe you'll be scared because it's the last thing you're looking for. I don't know. But that's my feelings on this random movie that Netflix produced, or whatever they do with how they mass produced all of these things all at once. I'm not sure if either of you would ever watch it, because I don't know either of you to be horror movie fanatics. Maybe Karen would have if I'd talked to her about it. But
no, but I think I'm having like a similar frustration. Not in the past three books that I've read this year, but just like, you know, going into reading or the same type of genre and just finding the language and what people are choosing to do in the book exhausting. I'm like, all right, I've read this before. Why am I wasting my time reading it again?
Yeah.
And just becoming tired of reading the same things. And then like, you know, you find that one author or like new author, like you just try something new and you get into a different rhythm or you find something interesting. And even if all of those same undercurrents are still there, like the same tropes and the same, like, you know, whatever they're focusing on, whether it's like YA or like new adult, like, you know, like that's still there, but they're writing about it in a new way. So like some scenes like, or you're like, oh, I guess it wasn't that bad of a book, but you know, overall, like no one's even trying to reinvent the wheel in a lot of the stuff that I've been reading. So it's becoming frustrating. But like I said, recently I've just kept trucking along and finding some new authors and new reading a lot of debut novelists who are not sticking to what has been done before and are trying something new. So there's hope from your gripe. I think there's more horror out there.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. The last movie that I've seen that hasn't terrified me but disturbed me in a way that was, like, good, and the way I'll describe that is saying that it helps me think about humanity and what it means to be a human, is, oddly enough, a cannibalist movie. It was called Raw. I'm not sure if either of you heard of it, but this is another one of those.
I think I saw the trailer for it.
I laughed so maniacally like I was agreeing with the cannibalist there, wasn't I? No, I'm not. It's... It's that this movie was made to show horror in a way of, like, it's not even, like, gross. It's just the senses, I would call it. Like, it does a good job of showing how, if you were losing your mind, this is how it would feel in a way. And that's where I think Veronica was trying to get at too, with what I was saying I don't even know, of her discovering that she herself was it's kind of like the Sixth Sense twist. Like, Bruce Willis was never dead. She was always dead, and she was always the villain, I guess. That's what I felt there. I kind of lost my point. Back to Raw. Yes. Raw is a movie that I would suggest if people want, I don't know what to call it other than, like, a thriller. It's not really horror, but it'll make you think in a way that I think this movie intends to make you, like the human condition, how we get to where we are. So if you want, like, a good suggestion out of all this, I would call it that. But I mean, don't go in eating food and being like, yay, this is fun, because you might get sick, because it does try and gross you out. It's not gory or graphic as much as it's just, like I said, it's the senses that'll get you. So try out that one, maybe, if you're turned off from Veronica but looking for more. Also on Netflix, too, I think, recently. It's a French film. Foreign language films sometimes are, to us Americans, more illustrious when they're horror movies, it seems.
I don't know. Horror in general, and I've said this many times before, I just don't understand, like, what's pleasurable about it.
It's I've learned over the years what it is for me, because I didn't get it as a child because I was not yet mature enough to appreciate or understand it as an art form. I was more of just scared. Now that I see past, like I said, the strings, I see the strings and then I go past that to look toward the character's intentions, I'm more interested, because kind of actually, Natalie, what you and I often talk about then again, of supernatural creating or genre creating the very realistic human interactions. That's what a lot of horror does too, on an even stronger level, because you see people not always in life or death situations, but just in very stressful scenarios. And it helps you to sometimes relate to how they're feeling. Yes, you don't have an actual monster chasing you, but it's all metaphorical anyways.
Fair enough. I've just never got, like, why some people, I guess some people get, like, excitement, like they get the fear jumps and then they get, like, adrenaline and they feel happy, but I don't feel happy.
No, that's, that is so fair, because jump scares, in my opinion, are cheap. They're not fun. They don't give me a good adrenaline boost. They give me the fear adrenaline boost. There's a big difference. I think if you're getting the fear adrenaline boost, you're probably someone that likes to jump off of anything that people jump off of. I don't know.
Yeah.
But
that's fine.
I don't even like feeling unsettled, though. So, like, so the scariest movie, I watched Get Out right before the Oscars. Which
I haven't seen Get Out.
I really liked Get Out. And I don't have an aversion to horror per se, but I will say, like, even to this day, the scariest movie that I've ever seen and still refuse to watch because I get a chill down my back just thinking about it is the Disney cartoon from, like, the 1950s The Legend of Sleepy Hollow.
Yeah.
I can't watch it.
Yeah.
I can't do it. It, like, even the daytime scenes, like, just Ichabod the character freaks me out. I can't. It's the most uncomfortable I've ever been watching a film in my life. I can't do it. And it's my younger brother's, like, favorite movie of all time.
There has to be some psychology there, because you've talked about that before. And I've never experienced this. I don't want to, but, like,
I can't do it. It's so, I've talked about it before because it's very traumatic in my life. And I will continue to talk about it until it stops being traumatic. So on my deathbed, I'll be like, "And Ichabod, no."
That's kind of great.
Okay, is that everything?
We did it.
That we have. Okay. So, I'm just trying to get this. Hang on. Copy. Thank you. Okay. All right. So that's everything that we have from our main section. And, you know, take that as you will, recommendations or things to avoid. And we'll move on to finishing up. So we've got our two truths and a lie. And we have our question of the day, and then we'll finish up. So two truths and a lie. Does anyone have anything particular to share, or shall I go ahead?
Oh, you go ahead. I am
please
fading so quickly.
But, oh, I'm sorry.
No, okay. I can never come up with these no matter what, because I'm not a very good liar, which is a good thing. But
so basic game, we're going to say three things and pitch them all as if they were true. And then one of them is going to be a lie. And shall I do this about myself, or shall I do it about facts about the world, or what shall I do?
Do it about your house.
Yes, that's exactly what I was going to request.
Okay, we can have an update on the house. All right, yes. Let's see. Two truths and a lie about the current state of Natalie's renovation at the new house. So number one is that the roofers put the wrong gutter on our front veranda, and they now have to come back and change it at their presumably their expense. Number two is that my bathroom skylight was put in the wrong place, and that they have to, the people who did that have to come back and change it at their expense. And number three is that the bathtub itself was put in at the wrong height, and it's too late to fix that, so now it's stuck.
I already know the lie. I think I've been following your house wankerness for long enough that I can sense it. You can't really fix a skylight. That has to be a lie. You're out. You're out with the skylight. You're just stuck with the skylight. So a very good lie, though, because these are all very well thought out, and I love the theme. I love the theme of at their expense.
That's, I love how Mitch is like, Brittany, just don't even bother. It's the skylight, which I am also inclined to say. But I feel like baths are so important. So I feel like you'd be more upset about the bath not being fixed. So I would have probably seen that posted somewhere. So yeah, I'm going to go with the skylight too. Makes the most sense.
You are both wrong. The skylight was put in the wrong place, and they did fix it. Wow. Though I didn't request. It was funny. My builder. Oh, wow. Yeah. Well, we have a metal sheeting roof. It's not terracotta tiles. So basically what they had to do is buy a new piece of metal sheeting and just cut the hole in a different place, if you know what I mean. It was meant to be centered over the bathtub, because we don't have a window on the wall in the bathroom. And it was the guy apparently was like, oh, yeah, like I can't do it there because there's like a beam in the way. And I was like, fair enough. That seems like a reasonable reason. So it was put in like slightly to one side. But then my builder, Jim Firmstone, the builder, he got upset. He was like, I don't know if it's because like he's liable. Like if in 10 years I decided to complain, like, and you know, didn't get what I actually asked for, that he would be liable, or just because he's quite nice and stuff. But he was like, no, I'm going to make them fix it. Spoke to the skylight company guy's boss, and apparently it was totally fixable. He just didn't have the part, like, the guy who did it did it to what was convenient at that second. Like, he didn't have the strut on hand to do it what we wanted. So he was just like, oh, yeah, I'll just put it here. And they apparently, you know, that was not good enough. So they called up and fixed it. No, the lie is the bathtub. The bathtub is the right height, or it can be fixed to the right height, because the tiler has to lay the bed for the floor tiles, and he could just make it up a couple of millimeters if necessary. But we did change the layout of like bathtub rim, taps, shower taps. Like, this got like changed so many times because of the size of tiles that we're using, and not like a specific, like, I wanted it to be like equal rows, like, that we didn't have to like cut in the middle of the tile. I wanted the bathroom, you know, bathtub to be like 4 tiles high or 5 tiles high or whatever. And then the tile was like a millimeter off from what it actually said on the, like, the supplier. I was like, yeah, it's 74 millimeters and it's actually like 73 and a half. Anyway, it's not, it can be fixed, but there was just a lot of back and forth drama about that. The front gutter was also true. They did put on the wrong gutter. I didn't think you'd ever notice the difference. I didn't think I'd ever notice the difference, but because I'd been forced into speculating about this so long and then decided, basically, like, it's a very old house. There's an old style gutter that was like the original shape. And then there's like newer ones that are similar, but have like slits in them and look a bit more modern. And since these differences were pointed out to me in terms of what do you want, because I would have been like, I don't know, what's normal. Now I look at every house gutter on every old house. Like, I walk around being like, gutter, gutter, gutter. And because I've been doing that for so long and then decided, as soon as I came over and seen they'd put the wrong one on, I'm like, nah, like, oh, God, no. But I'm so paranoid about waste and I'm like, can we use this one anywhere else, like at the back where no one sees it? But anyway, so, yeah, it's all going. I mean, it's moving along. It looks really different. Like, the bathroom is getting tiled and it's not just a pile of dirt. So, yeah.
Yeah, that's good. Yeah, I remember when it was a pile of dirt. That was not fun.
Yeah.
I act like I was living there with you.
I mean, you can come and stay in the house when it's finished if you want to.
Take on a trip to Australia. It'd be my first time.
Mm. Okay. So the next part is the question of the day from one of our listeners. We have a listener, Mariah Lovegood, and she has asked, what did you eat for dinner? What should I eat for dinner? Y'all, I'm hungry, but I have no energy to cook after a 7.6-mile hike. She did actually add this question a couple of weeks ago when we were requesting questions for another episode. So tonight, I don't think she went on the 7.6-mile hike today, but it's still relevant. So what did one eat for dinner?
Did you eat dinner, Brittany?
I did. I had homemade chicken soup with raviolis in it.
Wait. Oh, I never heard of that kind.
Well, it's just like instead of putting pasta in it,
instead of a dumpling.
Yeah, instead of like, we put ravioli in it.
Like a homemade or a canned?
No, a homemade. I can't eat, fun fact, I cannot eat canned meat of any kind. Oh, it grosses me out.
I just ate canned soup with canned meat included.
Yeah, I can't do it. I get like, it freaks me out. So the only time I'll eat soup is if it's vegetable in a can, that's fine. Or the meat is like homemade, like we make it here.
That's a lot nicer and more organized than me, as you often are, and I'm very envious of, because I just had chicken and rice Campbell's soup, water added, okay, so what I do is I freeze my bagels so that they stay nice and fresh for a very long time.
Yeah, you put them in the microwave and then put them right in the toaster.
Oh my God, yes.
Solid gold. That's the only way to do it.
Oh, and they're nowhere near as good as a New York bagel, but I would highly suggest not buying just a branded bagel because I got like a sesame just from the grocery store, and you'd be surprised what the bakery at your local grocery store might come up with.
Oh, yeah, the bakery ones are so much better than like anything that comes in like a plastic sleeve.
And they're less expensive. I mean, they're probably less preservatives if that's your thing, and you can freeze them so they stay longer, and they're going to be very fresh and very wonderful. So have yourself a nice bagel ahead with cream cheese, way too much cream cheese, but I guess that's just the human condition, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
I thought this story was going to end in you pouring the soup on the bagel. I didn't know what the bagel had to do with the soup.
No, dipping the bagel into the soup. That's my style, which some people find really disgusting, which I'm very offended about because that's the only way I've only eaten soup. Like, that's it. That's all you do. I don't know. Maybe I'm crazy for that. Like, crackers and or bagel. You need something to, like, go with it. Biscuit, whatever you have you.
Mm. Well, tonight, it's the middle of the day for me. Last night I had pizza delivery, but tonight I am making we have leftover wine, which is, like, probably actually still, like, not great because it's leftover from Christmas. So I am making a pasta with the white wine cream, you know, like creamy, cheesy white wine sauce situation. And I was very excited to do this when I found vegetarian Parmesan cheese at Aldi, because near my new house there's an Aldi and they label all of their products correctly. And just so you know, Parmesan cheese is, like, real Parmesan cheese is not vegetarian. Like, it's obviously not vegan, but it's not vegetarian because real official Parmesan cheese from Italy is made with beef rennet, like the setting, you know, whatever rennet does, it has to be pure beef rennet for it to be, like, labeled real Parmesan. Anyway, they had vegetarian Parmesan. So that is, I'm going to cook a pan of that when Leo gets home.
That's very
nice. That sounds awesome.
Yes. So that is what we are going to eat for dinner, or have eaten for dinner. So that's about it from us. We're going to finish up with the traditional not about the weather haiku. So our high conclusion today, I see that Brittany has jumped in and put this together for us. Pardon?
I didn't do it.
Oh, Mitch did it?
I did, in secrecy.
Mitch jumped in and did it. Wow, Mitch, in that case, would you like to read your marvelous creation?
Let's have at it. Okay. Christopher Robin and Jessica Season 2, Lin-Manuel is dark. I kept with the hypes. Thought I'd keep it positive for everyone to have a nice day after listening to us. If they're not so hungry that they hate us.
I'm sorry. I'll make you all pasta if you come to see me in my house in, you know, with the now correct skylight. Yeah.
All right. That's very amazing.
Well, thank you for joining us, and we'll talk to you soon. Let us know what you're into and not into at the moment. I just started watching this new Netflix show, Everything Sucks, and I'm just curious what people think about that as well. That's not as relevant as Lin-Manuel, so I didn't hype it or anything, but yeah, it's new. About to finish Jane the Virgin, about to catch up with Jane the Virgin. Very excited about that as well. So, lots of goodness. All right. Goodbye, everyone. Thanks for coming.
Goodbye.